Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Julie Hoffman is with East River Nursery. Last time she was here, we had a backlog of questions about gardening and growing from listeners, so we're taking on those questions today. And of course, we still want to hear from you with some new questions. Give us a call right now at 800-524-3604. You can ask Julie a question live on air, or send us an email, midday@sdpb.org. One more time with the phone number, 800-524-3604. Julie, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Good to be here, Lori. We didn't get very far the last time we talked.
We didn't. It was over before it started, it felt like. So let's take some time now. Where do you want to begin? Should I just start asking you some of these questions?
Let's just go through what we didn't cover the last time. Yes.
All right. Let's start in the garden with some zucchini. We have a staff member, actually, an SDPB staff member from Vermilion, who said her zucchini is growing large and bulbous at the stem, and then halfway it shrinks and sometimes rots in the shrunken area. What's to be done?
Okay, well, with zucchini and cucumbers and a lot of those vine plants, when we have misshapen fruit or ones that don't, you know, fully ripen or come to where you can actually harvest them, we're usually seeing a pollination problem. Something in that process has gotten interrupted, whether it be insects or heat has been playing a big factor in a lot of the vine crops this summer with our intense heat. So I'm suspecting it's a pollination problem. You can, you know, on those things that are misformed like that, they pretty much have to be discarded. Sometimes you can harvest and get the half a one or something like that. My experience, I've had it in my own zucchini plants. You know, might want to tell her or ask her if she's seen any insects feeding, because sometimes those can cause misshapen plants. I know I've had a real problem with earwigs this summer.
Yep.
Everybody has had them this year. It seems to be a good year for those. So insect feeding can also cause that distortion or malformation on there. But there are sprays. If you do get some nice blossoms on them, we've got a cooler, you know, weather this week. That's going to help. We do have sprays that are called Blossom Set, where you can actually spray them, and that will help with pollination, setting that, making sure that the fruit will set onto those plants. Just a little side factor, plants like the vine crops, if our nighttime temperatures are too warm, they get above 65, 70 degrees, which we experienced the last couple of weeks, the pollination doesn't occur on those flowers. So I've had lots of questions this week about why aren't my cucumbers or my zucchini setting anything. I've got lots of blossoms, but no fruit or nothing coming on. It's because of that interruption or trying not to get pollinated because of the heat at night.
Interesting. So I'm guessing there's nothing you can really do about that, the pollination.
Yeah, that's a physiological
right.
thing. I mean, there's nothing you can, you know, as far as we can't control what the temperature is going to be, but that our blossom set, it's a hormone type of thing that you spray on them, and that helps with fruit set. So if you really want a lot of zucchini, you could spray that on.
All right. And another zucchini question. This one's from Near Renner. Is it the same kind of squash bugs that eat up zucchini that are now attacking my hostas?
Not necessarily, although, again, the earwigs can. We've seen earwigs attacking hostas and squash both, but our experience has been if you've got hostas that are being eaten up, and if you can't see anything during the day, you go out there and there's lots of holes in your hostas, I would suggest taking a flashlight out in the evening and when it's dark and looking again, because I'm suspecting that it's slugs or snails that are chewing up those hostas. They hide under the leaves in the mulch or the soil during the day, and then at night when it gets dark, they come crawling out and they feed all night long. So, and earwigs will feed at night too. A lot of people say, well, I don't see anything on my plants, but go out in the evening with a flashlight and you'll see lots of critters out there at night.
And then what do I do about the earwigs, since they seem to be a common problem for lots of folks?
And I think on her question, or someone had asked about, you know, you can spray for them. Now, it depends on what your line of gardening thought is. If you are an organic gardener, if you are one of the people that don't mind using other types of chemicals, there are a number of ways to get control. For my part, I'm not one to do a lot of spraying with chemicals in my own garden. So what I have done, I will use some of the organics like neem, some of the insecticidal soaps. If I get really desperate, I may go to a 7 or something like that, the carbaryl barrel types of sprays, which are relatively low on the toxicity scale. But for the most part, if you go out there at night, a lot of those critters you can just pick off by hand if you're not too squeamish, or wear a glove. But sure, you can do a lot of good by just picking them off. A lot of insects, too, if you've got problems with other types like aphids or whiteflies or thrips or something, a good blast of water from the hose will wash off a lot of those critters. So that might be a way of getting rid of some of that, too.
Do I go out a few nights in a row and tackle them and notice a difference?
Commercial things you can buy, like slug traps and snail traps, and actually earwigs are attracted to them too. And you know, there's some old wives' tales about putting out saucers of beer or other carbonated beverages too. Somewhat, you'll find that most of those types of animals or insects will hide during the day underneath something like a rock, or if you lay a board down underneath those plants, they'll go where it's moist underneath there. And then in the evening, you can go out and actually flip that up. Whatever you've placed out there, and you'll find a lot of those guys hiding under there, and you can pick them up or destroy them that way too.
Sure. And I think maybe you were thinking about the question somebody else had, what bugs eat, I don't know how to say it,
clematis?
Yes, okay, clematis.
Now we'll have a discussion on that, because there's a camp that says clematis, and then if you're the proper English, it would be clematis.
Okay.
So,
what do you say? I'm going to go with what you say.
I'm a Midwestern girl, and I say clematis.
But all right, I'm a Midwestern girl, too.
However you say it, they're beautiful plants. They're actually one of my most favorite plants in the garden. I have quite a few of them growing. And there are certain bugs, again, that will affect clematis. You can get aphids, thrips, whiteflies, all of the above. But this year, it seems like the earwigs, both silly things.
Sure.
Really been causing a problem. Earwigs tend to feed on anything that's got a real soft, lush foliage. They love the flowers on clematis. They love the foliage. Again, we talked earlier about how to control those organically. Unfortunately, anything you might spray can also take out beneficial insects that might be out in your garden. So if you are going the organic way, most of the time you've got to hand pick those guys or lay your board down and find them in the evening to really get good control on them. There are other sprays too, commercial sprays, the things with pyrithrins or permethrin. You'll get some control too. So if you've got a really bad case of them, you might have to resort to something a little stronger.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking gardening with Julie Hoffman, East River Nursery. You can give us a call and you can ask her your question on air live. You can also reach us online. The phone number here is 800-524-3604, or send us an email, midday@sdpb.org. Julie from Sioux Falls, my yellow daylilies have stopped blooming. I can't remember if they'll bloom again if I remove the seed pods and fertilize.
They will. Most of our new varieties, unless it's a real old-fashioned type, are rebloomers. So just what the person says here, if you deadhead them, take those. After they bloom, they get kind of a seed pod on them where all that energy is going into producing seed. You want to cut those stems all the way back down into the green part of the plant. If you're going to fertilize at this time of year, we recommend something low nitrogen, something maybe organic, slow release, so that the plants don't get burned by a high nitrogen type of fertilizer. We have a number of organics we recommend for summer fertilizing. So yes, you can get them to bloom again.
Tell me what I look for when I go into the store and I ask for a low nitrogen organic fertilizer. Do you have a brand or?
Well, actually, we are big fans of the Espoma brand. It's called Plant Tone. Just like we exercise and keep ourselves in tone, we have a good fertilizer. Actually, the Espoma brand is from the East Coast, made with fish meal, kelp, all of the good organic things that are so good for our plants. If you are a fertilizer novice, if you've never bought fertilizer before, the fertilizer companies do really good jobs of marketing a lot of different kinds of fertilizer. The main thing you want to look for on the label is there's three main numbers that tells you percentage of fertilizer, and there's three main things that we see in fertilizer all the time: nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and those are the three numbers that you see on most fertilizer labels. Yes, all plants need that, but what we find in addition with organic fertilizers, they have those three things, but they also have extra things. It's like extra vitamins nutrients for your plant. You've got iron, you've got calcium, trace minerals like manganese and molybdenum. That's a mouthful. So
right.
all of those little things that really help to build strong root systems, to give you better flower power, to really just get that plant in really good health. So in the summertime, we want something low nitrogen, something that's with nitrogen, if you're putting a lot on and we get those really hot days and the plants don't have sufficient water, it can actually scorch them or burn the plants. Mm. Same thing for grass or your lawn. If you put too much nitrogen and no water, that can be a problem.
How do you apply that when it comes to daylilies? How do you apply it?
It's really easy, actually. The plant tone is in a granular form, a powder form, and you just kind of lift up the leaves and sprinkle some of it around the plant. How much you put on is on the bag. It tells you per plant size or what you're doing, if you're doing trees, if you're doing shrubbery, that sort of thing. It is multi-purpose. I use it everywhere in my garden. I'll put it on, a big bag of it, on my 8-foot wide by 16-foot raised beds for my garden. Mm. Right now I have 6-foot tomatoes, and I apply that once a year. I don't do it again during the summer. So okay. It's a very good product, and we recommend it for a lot of things.
So if she deadheads her daylilies and doesn't fertilize, does that do anything, or does she have to do both those things?
Actually, you probably, if she's already fertilized them once this year, on perennial flowers, we recommend once a year is a great plenty for perennials. If you've already done it once a year, then you don't need to fertilize again. If you haven't done it this year, then that's just going to give them a little boost and encourage them to set more flower buds.
Let's ask about strawberries. How do I get my new strawberry patch to start producing and stop sending off shoots? She bought 4 plants. Now she has 17, but no signs of flowers or fruit. And I was going to say, how does strawberries work?
Okay, well, my first question for her, and if she's listening, maybe she wants to call back in and let us know what kind of strawberries she planted. Hmm. There's 2 different types of strawberries. There's ones that we call June-bearing strawberries, and then there's ever-bearing strawberries. And June-bearing is just kind of what the name implies. They bear pretty much at the end of May into June. You see, these would be the berries that get bigger berries on them. The plants are a little larger, a little more vigorous. I have June-bearing at my house, and the reason I do that, and a lot of people plant June-bearing, is that they get the bigger berries, they get their crop all at once, and you'll see this with producers that are producing strawberries. They'll sometimes plant all of one type just to have an even crop. So if you're canning, freezing, or anything like that, it's easy to get your crop all at once, and you don't have to keep going back out and picking. With June-bearing, they just bear once per year. It's just during that spring season, you're going to get your whole crop, and then they're done. So with the gal that's got the strawberries, I question whether she has June-bearing or if she has ever-bearing, which they produce on and off throughout the season. So you'll get a nice crop in the spring, and then you'll get another nice crop later in the summer and fall. So with ever-bearing, their berries are sometimes a little bit smaller, although I've seen some really nice berries in some of the pick-your-own patches around the state. So Those would be most homeowners like the ever-bearing, because then you have a little bit for fresh eating most of the season. Now, as far as how they work, strawberries are producers. They really like to send out those runners shoots because they want to grow and make more plants and fill up your bed with those plants. That's just a natural thing, and most people, if they want to keep their rows organized and keep them in an area, they'll just trim those off, discard those if they don't want to have so many of those plants. The other question I would ask is that are you fertilizing, and if what type of product are you fertilizing with? If we're using things like Miracle-Gro or some of those fertilizers that have higher nitrogen, we see a lot of energy go into the plants growing green, beautiful leaves, but we don't see a lot of fruit production because of the high nitrogen. What we would recommend is pulling back on that and again, using the organics or something that's got more potassium and phosphorus that will encourage the blossom set and the fruit set on that. So we need a little more information from her to really recommend what she should be doing.
Okay, the phone number is 800-524-3604 if you want to talk strawberries, and that was your question. Give us a call. Here's another one. What do we do about deer? They have cleaned us out. They've cleaned us out the last couple of years, and that one is coming from Sioux Falls in the city.
In the city, and you know what? In Huron, we live just south of town, but we live in a kind of a little, right along the highway, four-lane highway, and we have houses. I have houses not 25 feet, they're that close together in my own home, and we have deer walking up and down the alley, kind of browsing the salad bar, as I call it, going up and down, coming in the backyard, you know, coming, they jump the fences, they're doing everything. So I understand the frustration of, you know, planting beautiful things and not having them come to fruition, or the deer are just eating everything. Having said that, there are some things you can do. We do have a number of different kinds of sprays that for deer repellents, and there's a lot of them on the market. And as far as their effectiveness, some of them work better than others. We have one that we really like from out of Sweden. It's called Plant Skid. Again, a lot of them, most of them will be based with probably garlic or blood solids from various kinds of animals or whatever. And those are quite effective when applied properly. And there's the key, applied properly and often. You know, you got to keep after it. If you're going to be spraying any of these things, we get a hard rain. A lot of them are water soluble, so they wash off very easily. So you're out there continually, it seems like, putting things on your garden. Having said that, too, probably the most effective way, and I found this myself, is just good old-fashioned fencing. Last year I planted some beautiful cherry bushes, some of the bush cherries out of Canada, Romeo and Carmine Jewel, very nice plants, only get about 5 or 6 feet tall, work really well in a small area. We planted those in our backyard, and 2 days after we planted them, the deer ate them down to practically nothing. There was nothing there. Yes. Oh, that's what I said. Well, maybe I said a little bit stronger word than that. But so we did spray. I did use the sprays. But again, I said we have an irrigation system, you know, so things were getting wet all the time, having to go back out and spray. And then, you know, I thought, well, maybe over the winter they'll forget about them. No show on that. They were there right back this spring eating them down. So we finally did erect some fencing around those areas, and now they're pretty much leaving them alone. So I think a good strong fence is probably your best defense against having those things in your yard. There are two plants that are deer resistant. There's some things that deer, I shouldn't say that, deer resistant. There are some things that they tend not to eat, but I've seen them eat them if they get hungry enough. So, you know, do a little research as far as what types of plants. Things you want to stay away with, you know, if you're doing perennials, are they love daylilies. Hostas, they will eat right down to the ground. So some of those things you need to stay away from if you're really having problems or issues or can't put up fencing and that sort of thing.
Not like the slugs. You can't go out with a flashlight and just pick them up.
Can stay out there all night long. And I've seen some really creative scarecrows. You know, people have put up things that jump out at the deer. You know, I saw one guy, you know, those funny blow-up things that wiggle around on the used car lots to get your attention. I have seen people use those to keep the deer. You know, they come on a timer, and all of a sudden they poof up and they scare them. So there's some really creative people out there. I'd love to hear if any of that's working for anybody.
Let's do this one. We have milkweed in bloom in our pastures. We want to collect some seeds to plant for the monarch butterflies to make the patch bigger for next year. What's the best way, and when do I collect the seeds this summer?
Okay, so what you're going to see on milkweed, and what we're doing too is, if you've got naturally occurring stands of milkweed in the field, the first thing to do is not over harvest those. If you're planning on getting seed and wanting to plant it somewhere else, this one sounds like they just maybe want to make it bigger. Mother Nature will do a lot of that for you, but if you want to really try to be precise and keep it in that one area, the time to do it is when those pods are going to be like big, they're going to pop, they're going to be balloons, and you'll see when they go out later in the summer. Mine haven't set a lot of pods yet. I grow them in my own garden, just let them come up naturally. Haven't seen a lot of pods yet, but what will happen is they'll have the great big green pod, almost looks like an okra pod, if you've ever seen okra. Mm-hmm. And they will start to swell. And you can kind of go out there and check them out every once in a while. Probably later in July into August, they'll start to set those. And what will happen, if you press them slightly, they're going to pop open. And the mechanism by which the seed is spread on a milkweed, and that's what you see are those big white fluffy, the fluffy stuff inside with a little seed attached to the end of it. And of course, the wind catches them and blows them away and reseeds in other areas. If you want to harvest those, you got to do a little bit of, you know, kind of timing is really important. You can pick them, but you don't want to pick them too early. If you pick them and you open them up and the seeds are white or very pale brown, they are not ripe. They will not ever produce a plant. You have to wait till they're dark brown, almost a black brown color, before they're viable enough to set to grow for you. And when you go out to harvest, if you harvest them, you get them at that right time, you've got some nice black seeds, and you get them before they poof out,
right?
you can take them home, pop them open, and inside there's kind of a rib down the middle of them. If you open them carefully and grab that fluffy stuff by the top, because that's the stuff that's really tough. Once they fluff out, it's really tough to pick those and very tedious to pick those individual seeds off. So you want to grab it, kind of scoop out that fluffy white stuff, and you'll see the seeds are all along the sides of the white stuff, and pull it out, and then kind of gently remove the seeds and then discard the fluff. So that's the easiest way to get them. If you've already got some that are opened up, you know, you're too late. Oh, darn, I didn't make it out there in time. You can actually take that fluff ball, if you can carefully cut it, put it inside a paper bag with some coins like pennies or nickels, and put it in the bag and then shake it really hard. The metal pieces in there will knock the seed off of the fluff. Cut a corner off of the bag and kind of gently get the seeds out, and then the fluff is all contained inside the bag. That would be easy to do, too, or easy to get a hold of. Now, once you've got the seeds, that's a long process to go through to get milkweed.
But we might have to come back to that next time, Julie, because we're out of time, and that might have to be a two-part question on what to do with your seeds.
Okay.
Julie Hoffman, there's so much. We have questions in our queue still, so we're going to bring you back again throughout the summer, I think, and we'll get to more of them. I want to say thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Lori.